to come. I didn't want to, but I'm not really a speaker. I'm a listener, but I'm going to do my best tonight. Thank my friends for coming out with me, Kim and Dorothy. And I've been to this meeting probably a little over a year ago. I came with another speaker, and I didn't get to look out behind because y'all had me on the front row. And I'm glad that you're here. You know, it's my honor and pleasure to be at a meeting on a Saturday night. You know, where else would a drunk go? You know, that's what I do now. I hang out at meetings. I don't hang out at the bars or the hangout houses or none of that. I'm gonna say the Serenity Prayer, and I'm gonna try to start from there. So if you join me, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, what it used to be like and what it's like today. I'm the fourth child in my family. I have three older brothers and the younger sister, which is, she's about 14 years younger than I am. So I know y'all I didn't like that. So, you know, I was used to being the little brat that I am. And, but my life is basically, I believe, I don't know, my people and my family say I act out when I was born, you know, and it ain't changed that much, but it's changed a little. When I was going to school, it was just me and my youngest brother at home. The other two was already in high school or working, and my mom made my school clothes, and back in them days, you had to wear the same thing twice, you know, and my mom used to dress me real cute, and it was kids in our neighborhood that, it was like only two of us at home, but it was a couple of families on the street that I grew up in that was 11 or 12 kids. And the girls, they would get jealous of me. And in the bathroom, they would used to try to take my clothes off and that my mom had made. And, you know, if you had a mom like mine, you go to school cute and then you come back home cute. But the girls trying to fight you, you can't come home cute. So I had to learn how to fight, defend myself at a young age, you know, fighting in the bathroom, and I think I was like in the fifth or sixth grade, and then I would come home and they would catch me in the neighborhood by myself and they would try to jump on me, and my mom told me, don't, if they hit you, you better hit them back and don't come in this house crying, you know, and that started for me at a young age, and I hadn't had a drink yet, but I always liked to fight, and it had got to the point where I started picking fights, you know. You know, everybody was, and I was, like I say, I was pretty much the only young lady in the neighborhood that could come out and play. My mom worked a lot, and she was gone, and the other kids in the block, you know, their mom was home, so they had to stay home and do their homework, and I always wanted to play, you know, and so I sneak over my little girlfriend house, and we used to burn biscuits on top of the stove, and then I got a little older, and I was playing baseball with the boys in the fields, and then my mom decided she wanted her own house, and so we moved over to the west side, and the boys in the neighborhood. But before that, my mom them used to have domino and card parties. So, you know, the adults would leave the beer and the cigarettes around and then tell you to clean up and, you know, have you dancing for them. So me and my cousin, we would always clean up, but we would drink the beer and smoke the cigarettes and, you know, get sick and stuff. But I didn't think that that was the start of my alcoholism. And, you know, later on I found out that it was. But we moved over to the west side, and the young men in my neighborhood, they used to play football in the street. You know, and they would go to the store and have their beer and they weed. You know, I thought before I was alcohol that weed was my drug of choice. But I found out later that I started with alcohol and I ended with alcohol. But that weed was like awesome, you know. And I used to say I started off with Pat Blue's Ribbon Beer and I ended up with Pat's Blue Ribbon Beer. My sobriety date is December 3rd, 1987. And I drank for over 25 years, you know, and I enjoy drinking. I have fun drinking, you know. Back in the day, they had cheek and chong joints, and my mom, she ain't no alcoholic, but she liked to make them daiquiris and pink panties, and, you know, and that was my drink of choice, you know. I love me some daiquiri, you know, and they couldn't, you know, I used to, didn't think I'd drink and drive, but I did, because I had that daiquiri in between my legs and a regular cup, or put it in a bottle and used to drive with it, you know, and I did a lot of, they got a chapter in chapter 3 that they read more about alcoholism, and they say you switch from wine to from beer to wine, you drink without a drink, and you drink taking a trip, not taking a trip, and I did all of that, you know. I tried everything, you know, and I know this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and that little white stuff probably forwarded me in here, you know. I had a brother that my mom put him out when he was turned 18, because me and him was doing a lot of stuff, and she thought that he was doing most of the stuff, and she found out I was doing it, but she put him out. So me and him didn't get along for a lot of years, and he had his own place, and he didn't keep it clean, and I used to go over there and steal his money. And then I would say my little sister did it, you know, and I knew all the time he knew it was me. And I didn't go to high school, I barely went. I met this guy, he was married, I was 15, and he introduced me to the adult life, you know. And I loved that man, you know. I stopped going to school, you know, I stopped doing what a 15-year-old supposed to do. I was one of them that, you know, they say once you get sex, it's a whole new life. And and I had sex and drugs, and I was rocking and rolling, you know. I had a rise, and I was ditching school a lot, and, you know, I used to go up to Griffin Park, me and my girlfriend. I think I was about in the 7th or 8th grade, and we'd get our weed and our alcohol, and we'd hitchhike, you know, to Griffin Park, and with older men. You know, I hang out with older men, and older men, they buy you what you want, you know, to get what they get, and that's what I did for a lot of years, and it got to the point where I decided I didn't want to stay in my mother's house no more, so I got a little job and see this old man that I was call myself dating. He had this job that he was always off, you know. He'd do his work and he had a lot of time to just hang out. But we would drink all the time, you know, and we would go places. Then he'd come back and get his little truck and go back to the office. And I thought that was cool, you know, when I wasn't old enough to get a job then, but I just thought that was cool. So I said, when I get big enough, I want me a job like that, you know. We don't grow up to say we're going to be alcoholics, but that's what I end up being, you know. Because when I didn't graduate, they still let me walk across the stage, but I had to go back to get them grades that I didn't get. And my mom, she told me, my dad at the time, he wasn't there. She put him out when I was 5. And, you know, I can't say, but I believe my dad was an alcoholic. And she put him out the house early. And so I didn't have no dad. And she was working all the time. And so I kind of like was a latchkey kid, you know. I kind of took care of myself. But anyway, my mom told me when I got out of school, I was going to either go to school or get a job. I wasn't going to be just sitting around in her house. I had to get a job. And, you know, when you get a job, you got your own money. You can do what you want to do. You know, I had to pay a light bill here and there. And that was it. So the rest of my money, I got messed up. You know, I got the drink and the other stuff that went along with it, and I got a couple of people told me don't come back on their job, but at that time I didn't know why, and I know why today, because I was stealing their money from the cash register. You know, I was putting more in than I was keeping more than I was putting in the cash register. I would go home at night, my pockets be full of change. And, you know, everybody gave me some change. I didn't ring it up. You know, so eventually them people told me, well, we don't need your assistance anymore. So I didn't go back. And then I got this job that this guy that I was dating, he was working. And, you know, I couldn't pass the test. And I didn't know why at the time. I thought it was because I wasn't going to school, but it was because my head was full of alcohol and drugs all the time, you know. And it took me 2 or 3 tries to get this job, and I finally got this job, and I had a rise, you know. You know, they say at some point in your life you pass that invisible line, and I guess by maybe a month or two after I got this job, I passed that line, because I was drinking every day, you know. I was going to work. I was drinking. I decided I want my own place, so me and another friend, we decided we're going to play house. And move in together, and that's what I did, you know. And my life just took off. We partied every night, you know. I don't know how I got to work some days the next morning, but I went to work, you know. I didn't come here from going to jail, you know. I didn't come here homeless. But I came here empty. My soul was empty. You know, I didn't know that at the time, but, you know, came from one of them hospitals where you do the coursing shuffle. You know, you got to shuffle your feet and do what they say. You're in the white robe after I moved out, I partied every day, but it got to the point where I couldn't take care of myself no more. And 3 years after I moved out, I had this kid, and I thought I was doing okay, and I didn't drink and use for a whole year. And after that kid was 2 years old, I decided I wanted to take a drink. And I took a drink, and I couldn't stop drinking. And I did that for almost 4 years. And I moved back home. My mom let me move back in. And I thought I had a built-in babysitter, you know, because I would go to work, come home, and 2 hours later I was gone. And I would leave my son in this little back house that we got. And he was only... He was only about 2-3 years old at the time. And I would lock him in, and I would go down the alley, and I always say, I'm going to be right back. And I never did come right back, you know. And but every time, for some reason, my son would be in the house when I got back. And my mom told me one day, you know how you rob from Peter and try to pay Paul back? And I was taken from here. I was stealing from my brother. I was telling my aunts I need this to do that with. And always lying. Always lying. And just to get my drink on. You know, just to have a drink. And was making money, you know. They talk about demoralization when you get in here, and even though you don't know, but your family already know that you messing up. And I would make a big check on Friday, and Saturday morning I would go to work and have to ask somebody to buy me some breakfast. And I'd be like, damn. And I didn't do it just one time. It was over and over and over and over and over. And I couldn't understand what was wrong. And anyway, I had moved back home by then. And my mom, one day, I guess she was sick of me. And she came home. And if you got a mom like mine, you know that look, you know. And her voice changed. And she was like, I ain't taking it no more. You know, you need to get out my house, and you need to leave your boy here, and we'll be okay. You just get the hell away from here, and I don't want to see you no more. And I don't know about y'all, but when my mom told me that, I wanted to get sober. You know, I really did, but it took me another about 6 months. You know, giving her the check, told mom will be good. But if you're an alcoholic like me, you find a way to get the money. You know, I'd be like, Mom, I need this to do that. And I knew it wasn't nothing but for the alcohol. You know, I wasn't paying rent nowhere. You know, I didn't have no bills to pay. My car wasn't running, so, you know, what I need money for? But I would always beg her. And what happened was, after about 6 months, my uncle died. I have to tell y'all before I came into the program, I think I was about 19 at the time. And the biggest tragedy that I had in my life was that my grandfather died. My father died, and my grandmother died within 3 months of each other. And my grandfather and my father, they died on the same day. And I was 19, and it was in 1974, and they couldn't find me to tell me that. And when I found out, And I went to my father's house, and he had died of an aneurysm. He had bled to death, and they wouldn't let me see him. And they would only let my oldest brother go in, and that hurted me, you know. And I shut down. I shut down till I had my own child, and I think that was probably about 10 years different. And I didn't think about my father no more until I had my son. And I promised myself that I wasn't going to live like my father did, because my father was one of those drunks that it talks about in the big book, that he got his legs cut off and he still would drink. And I would see it growing up as a young lady. And I could never accept him. I would use him all the time. And when he died, I just shut all them feelings down. And my grandmother was like my ace. And after she was gone, I didn't have no one to talk to, you know, because I come from a household that you don't talk. You just listen. And I had a lot of feelings that I stuffed. And what happened when I, back forward, when my mom had put me out and my job was start talking about you coming to work, your clothes are smelling and you stinking. And I was like, that ain't me. You know, I took a shower, you know, but I was reaping of alcohol and didn't know it. And my uncle passed early in 1987, and we went to his funeral, and they had to come find me once more, you know, because I had hooked up with some people that was doing what I like to do. And we got drunk, and I wasn't acting right, and family was tired of me. And, you know, they had one of them family meetings, what we going to do with her, you know, because I was the oldest girl of all the girls that was in our family at the time. And I was the oldest, and I was getting my cousin them drinking, and we used to go to San Diego a lot when they used to have them concerts up there, and we sneaking in alcohol, and our uncles coming to our room because one of got a shoe or something, and we'd be passed out and didn't even know it, you know. And that's the kind of life I lived. And what happened for me in 1987 after my uncle's funeral, one of my friends at my job, and she's still my friend today, she told me that I needed help. And I was at the point where I was just whooped, you know. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror no more. I didn't want to live, but I didn't want to die either, you know. And she got me to a hospital program, and in that hospital program, I think they told me I slept for about the first 2 weeks because I was just sick and tired. I was just tired. And that last Thanksgiving, you know, my natal birthday is in November. Then you got Christmas, Thanksgiving the week after, and then it's Christmas. That's the time of the year to party, you know. And I just couldn't make it no more, you know. I just had ran out. And anyway, I went to that hospital program December 3rd, 1987. And I've been in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous ever since, you know. I went to that program, and they had us bring meetings in, and, you know, there's a lot of guys in that room. And, you know, I don't know if they liked me or not, but I liked them. And I was playing in the back room with them, and this guy, he came and spoke on a panel, and he was like, he banged on it, like, real loud, because we was back there laughing and, you know, messing around and not paying attention. And he said, I came in here to help you. And, you know, I'm a smart ass, don't know nothing. And me and this young man got real smart with him, and they escorted us out. But something that man said, I can't tell you what it was. Maybe it was a knock on the table, or what, but after that day, I started paying attention. You know, we start going to groups and start talking about feelings, and I didn't ever know what I was feeling because I could never talk to it about people that I was around, you know. And anyway, they started taking us to outside meetings, to AA meetings, and I went to a meeting, and it was a couple sharing, and I still don't know what they said, but it was just something in those rooms that I felt that, like, kind of like in this room when you come in and everybody hugging you and, you know, shaking your hand and wanting to get to know you. And I didn't have that when I was growing up. When I was in from elementary school to high school, everybody always wanted to fight me, you know, fighting on the street, you know. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the first meeting I went to, which was around the corner from my house, and it happened to be a book study that night, and the lady, I walked in the door, and she gave me a hug, and she told me if I just had a little mustard seed of faith, that my life would be okay. And I don't even know who that lady was today, but since that day, my life's been okay. You know, the next day, I decided I wanted to go to the store and get me a soda. And the liquor store is around the corner from my house. And I went to the liquor store. And back in those days, they had the liquor first and then the sodas later. And I went in there to get a soda. And I stopped at the liquor part, and I started shaking, and I had never shaked before. You know, I had DTs and all that stuff, but I ain't never shook before. And not having that, be able to drink that drink, and just walking past the liquor counter and start shaking, I was like, man, I didn't know what to do. So what I did, that next night, I went back to a meeting. And pretty much that's been my life. I go to a meeting every day. You know, I had to move out the area where I was staying, so I moved about 90 miles away, and I gave myself and my son a chance to live. You know, we moved to a new community, and my son finished high school out there, and he got a chance to grow, but I had to do it through Alateen. You know, I didn't know what Al-Anon, but this psychiatrist that they told me that my son and I needed to go to, you know, I was like, I don't need no psychiatrist, he do, you know. But I didn't know how to communicate with my child. You know, he was 4 years old when I got here, and we didn't start talking to each other till he was about 10 years old. Because he started acting like I was acting. You know, he started stealing from me. He was running away. And that was because me, his mother, didn't know how to love him. You know, and I learned that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, how to love him like you guys was loving me, because I didn't get it from my mother. You know, and they told me about Al-Anon and Alateen, and I only went to Al-Anon because I had to wait for him to come out of Alateen, and that was about a little over 15 years ago. But now I go to Al-Anon because of me, you know, because I want to, and I need to learn how to deal with the family after. Because they always don't do what I like them to do. You know, it's like I moved back to L.A. because that mother that put me out over 20 years ago, I'm her caretaker today. She let me back in her house. You know, she gave me the key. And that credit card that I was messing up, she gave me another one. You know, figure that out, you know. I'm a drunk. I don't do stuff like that. You know, but when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard that I didn't know how to live on life's terms. And I didn't know what that meant because I had a job. You know, I had my own car, but I was still at my mama's house. You know, I wasn't taking care of myself. And they told me that I need to get my own place so me and my son can learn how to grow, you know. And that's what I had to do. And, you know, I had to go back to that job and make amends and, you know, stop stealing from that job and stop lying, learn how to live without lying. You know, if I wasn't paying this bill, I was paying this bill to cover up for that bill. But what I learned how to do is just pay the, what I could pay. You know, if I didn't have it, I couldn't pay it. You know, and I've learned that, you know, when I got here, since I didn't go to school, my comprehension for reading, I know how to read, but I can't comprehend what I read. And the big book studies of Alcoholics Anonymous helped me to get that back. You know, I go to a big book study on Thursday. My home group is 88 from Crenshaw on Saturday night. So if you ever down in L.A., we there. I go to a morning meeting in the morning. I go to speaker meetings, and I try to help people when I can. You know, I really don't, I'm not a big on sponsoring people, but I do a lot of H&I work. I go to central office. I answer the phones. Alcohol has just saved my life. You know, it's like, it's a life beyond my wildest dream. You know, when I got here, they told me that alcohol was just a symptom, you know, just a symptom of what I do. And my thinking is screwed up, and I need to come and let people talk to me so I can listen and don't always go on my thinking, you know, because Alcoholics Anonymous is my therapy group. You know, I go every day to get the therapy, and when I don't go, I feel it. You know, I gotta call somebody, let them know what's going on with me. And a lot of old timers helped me when I got here. You know, they told me that this is a new way of living. You know, my old behaviors don't work no more. And I found that being sober, that I can't do the same thing I used to do drunk sober. You know, I'm going to go rob your store and think I'm going to get away. I feel it in my gut. You know, I feel it. You know, I'm going to cuss you out and go home and be okay with that. You know, I get to feel the feelings that I didn't feel when I was drinking. Drinking alcohol was trying to kill me, but I couldn't see it. It's like they say, you can't hear till you can hear, and you can't see till you can see. And, you know, if anyone is new in these rooms, you got a gift beyond your wildest dream. You know, you don't ever have to take a drink even if you want to. You know, and that's some of the things that they told me, and told me to get in, open that book of Alcoholics Anonymous and read what is in there. And if I couldn't understand what I was reading, get somebody to sit down and understand and explain it to me. You know, and that's what has happened for me, and that's what I try to do for other people, you know, that come into the room. And these rooms are no joke for me. You know, they say it saved my life. You know, it's given me a life back. You know, today I don't want to drink, but I don't want these rooms to disappear either. You know, because this is this is where I go for my fun. You know, she was, the lady was reading that this is not a glum life, you know, and it's not, because when I was drinking, you could barely get me out of the room on the holiday. You know, the whole family's in the house and everybody having fun, and I'm back there drinking and I can't move, I'm sick, and, you know, all right, just bring me a piece of ham, I'll be okay, you know, and y'all could go back and do y'all thing, you know, but just leave me alone. And man, you can't keep me in the house today, you know. I get to travel. I didn't think people, you know, I just thought men loved me for one thing, you know, and today I found out that if I don't love myself, how somebody else gonna love me? And today I love myself, and I have a mate around this room that we get to travel together and just see the world, you know. God took away my skating from me about six years ago. I haven't worked for over 6 years. I snapped my back and my shoulders went out, and I didn't think I would be able to walk again, let alone, you know, do. Skating is my favorite thing to do. You know, I've been skating since I've been knee high to the ground, and when God took skating away, I thought that was it. Life was over. You know, I can't drink. I can't skate. Man, what's left? And, you know, I go to the International Women's Conference every year in February. My sponsor turned me on to that. You know, I'll be up in San Diego. They used to switch it from San Diego to Bakersfield, but I think it's just in San Diego now, and I get to go to that conference. I've been to the World Conference. You know, I hang around alcoholics like I am. You know, sober people and me don't mix. You know, like some drinks don't mix. And I have to hang around sober people today because I get in trouble, because I learned around here how to speak my mind today. You know, I don't hold stuff in. I don't cuss you out, you know, like I used to, but I don't hold stuff in today. I let you, you know, tell you what's going on. And I told Natalia that, you know, I wasn't coming today because that son that was 4 years old when I got here, he's 25 years old today. And me and him was going to celebrate, and I told him that I was going to speak, and he was like, "It's okay, Mama, I know, and we'll celebrate tomorrow." That's God. You know, it's only by the grace of God that, you know, I still have him in my life. I got my family back. You know, this brother that we about 4 years apart, that my mom put him out. We hadn't spoken probably 15 years. And when I made that amends to him, one Christmas day we was going to a family function. And just so happened that, you know, they say God will put people in your life where you don't think they would. And just so happened me and him was riding to the function by ourselves, and we got to talk, and I told him, you know, that I was sorry for the things that I did, and I didn't think he would never forgive me. Me and that brother talk every day on the phone now. You know, they don't pass no more than 2 or 3 days when we have some kind of conversation. And we ain't cussing each other out. You know, it's a normal conversation. And you know, you get to get your life back. You know, everybody ain't going to do what you want them to do. But if you learn how to mind your own business and stay out the way and let people be who they be, you get to live around here. You know, you don't have to die no more. And that's what I've gotten from alcohol. There's some nice stories in the back of the book. that I learned how to read before I read the first part of the book. And that helped me, you know, hearing other people's story, how they got to the other side. Because alcohol was a part of my life, and I didn't know how to put it down, you know. And getting a guide of my own understanding and helping me through this process, it works. You know, I can't tell you how it works or when it works, but I believe God is sitting in these seats when we come into these meetings. Because they say if one or two or more is gathered, you know, there's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe that. I have a friend that send me a little saying in the morning, because sometimes I read a lot of prayer and meditation books, and they help, you know, because when I don't do it, I recognize it. And but a friend of mine, she sent me a little saying in the morning, and I thought this was fit for the night for me sharing it. I like to read it. And it says, from the inside out, when you feel the urge to be critical of someone else, look first within you. The weakness and the shortcomings you perceive in another may very well be pointing to improvement you can make in your own life. Instead of depending on others to change or attempting to force them to do so, look for the positive change that you can make. You always have much more success controlling your own life than you will have in controlling others. If you wish to live in a positive world, be a positive person. If you desire peace, then be completely at peace with yourself. Life is a mirror that reflects your most authentic self back to you. It flows from the inside out. The values and the pride that you live by will gratefully influence the world that you live in. The thoughts and the feelings you hold most consistently on the inside will determine how life unfolds for you on the outside. Allow peace, love, joy, and fulfillment to flow from inside out. Make the world the best it can. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. Thanks for letting me share.